The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, and we made it to a Friday. Well, some of us did. Over 250,000 Americans haven't made it this far. And we have an idiot who is digging his heels in inside the Oval Office, making me ask the question, coup or no coup? It certainly seems like a coup to me, where we've got this guy today bringing in the Michigan State Speaker of the House and I don't know who the other guy, a state senator, to meet with him because Donald Trump wants to convince them to do what had been floated for weeks before the election. The thing that Barton Gellman of The Atlantic suggested in an article that Trump was planning. Not that he can pull it off, because, you know, Donald Trump, plan as he may, he rarely is able to pull anything off successfully. The one thing he has been able to pull off has been to con half of America into voting for him and believing his line of bullshit. It's astounding. A lot of breaking news today. A lot of things happening. First, Georgia, who on Wednesday completed their hand recount, an audit, basically, that had nothing to do with what Donald Trump wanted. This was a quality control thing that Georgia had set up. And so it came on Wednesday. They finished the hand count actually early, and it reaffirmed the fact that Joe Biden won in the state of Georgia. Well, this morning, the Secretary of State of Georgia, who, by the way, is a Republican and even says that he's a Trump supporter, go figure, Rappelsberger or something like that is his name. He this morning said, or around right around noon Eastern, affirmed that he was certifying the election. But then a couple hours later, I got an email news alert that said, let me see if I can't find it, because it was kind of, just kind of weird. Basically, I can't find it. This is what I get for I have so many different emails here that I don't. Oh, here. Georgia Secretary of State issues correction, saying certification of its general election results is still underway. Despite an earlier announcement, this is from the Washington Post, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger said the office is still completing its certification. The office issued a correction, reversing an earlier announcement that had declared the certification was complete. And then he said he expects the certification to be completed later today. Well, lo and behold, it's a done deal. So for the fourth time, this election season, the state of Georgia announces that Joe Biden is the winner. Brad Raffensperger certified it today. This timestamp is 4:34 p.m. Eastern. So that's done. It's done. Now, apparently, I guess the Trump campaign can still request a recount as long as they do it by Tuesday. And I'll give you a hamburger today. Sorry, I get confused sometimes. But they'd have to, I think, have to pay for it because the margin of victory was below the 0.5 percentage points that it falls under. Now, there is a recount going on in Wisconsin that Trump had to pay for because it wasn't within that margin. But funny, they're only recounting in two districts, which are the ones that are majority-minority districts, where there's a large concentration of African-Americans. Funny how that happens. Not funny, ha-ha. Funny, curious. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. It is Friday. We've got a really, really busy show for you today. A little later on in the hour, my old friend Boca Brittany Summers is going to join us. I actually invited her. You know, it's been too long since she's been here anyway. But today happens to be, oh, I'm going to get it wrong because I didn't write it down, the National Transgender Day of Remembrance. And it falls at the end of the week, the National Transgender Awareness Week. And Britt is our official transgender member of the Nicole Sandler Show. So actually, I don't want to take too much credit for her. She calls herself the, what does she say? The only, I'll find out before I introduce her. We'll get to it. We'll let her tout her own thing. And John Nichols, who is the national affairs correspondent for The Nation magazine, will join us in just a couple of minutes. And he happens to be based in Wisconsin. He's lived in Wisconsin. His family, the family of Nichols, has lived in Wisconsin for something like 8 generations or something like that. So he can fill us in on what's going on there. By the way, just in case you were thinking that it had been just too long since we had a mass shooting, damn, there is one happening now, apparently, in Wisconsin. The town called, I got to look it up because I don't, Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, which is apparently about 7 miles northwest of Milwaukee. There is a emergency services responded to a mass shooting with multiple victims at the Mayfair Mall. And the incident began just before 3 p.m. Friday, which would be 4 Eastern time, which is just over an hour ago. So I don't know. I don't have any details on how many victims or if they've caught the shooter or anything. I just heard some of the live coverage from one of the TV stations there. But here we go again. Welcome to America. And let me share this with you before I bring, before I get John Nichols on the line. Geraldo Rivera, you know, good old Jerry Rivers. Geraldo, a Fox Not News fixture these days, had an interesting suggestion. I don't know if this was this morning or last night, but either way, Geraldo thinks that we should name the upcoming vaccine, I can't even say it without laughing, for Donald Trump. Seriously, listen.
I had an idea, when with the world so divided and everybody, you know, telling him he's got to give up and time to leave and time to transition and all the rest of it. Why not name the vaccine the Trump? You know, make it like, have you gotten your Trump yet? No, it'd be a nice gesture to him. And years from now, it would become just a kind of a generic name. Have you got your Trump yet? Oh, yeah, I got my Trump. I'm fine.
Yeah,
I wish we could honor him in that way because he is definitely the prime architect of this Operation Warp Speed. But for him, we'd still be waiting, into the grim winter for these amazing, miraculous medical breakthroughs.
Bullshit.
Yeah, sorry, that's just bullshit. Because, for instance, the AstraZeneca vaccine, that's the one done in conjunction with Oxford, had nothing to do with Trump. Pfizer did not participate in his Operation Warp Speed. Donald Trump has nothing to do with this. And by the way, the phrase of, did you Trump today? Well, we already have a meaning for that. We've been using it in this household for 4 years now. So when Jackson, my dog, is out in the yard and we watch to make sure he does his business, we go, oh, thank goodness, Jackson's trumping. If I feel that, you know, that familiar rumble in my gut and I know that a movement is about to come, it's like, I got to go Trump. Or you can put it, you know, another way, I got to take a Trump or I need to go have a conversation with the president. So Trump already has a synonym, and it is not anything to do with being vaccinated. Sorry, he hurts you. He affects you in different ways. Got it? Okay. There's so much more going on today, and I guess we'll just deal with it all as we talk to our guests. So John Nichols is doing it the old-fashioned way. He wanted to be on by phone. So let's dial him up and see what happens here. Okay, come on. Why isn't it calling? Uh-oh. I love it when this happens. All right, John Nichols. I just had him up here. All right, so John Nichols. There we go. And sorry, I can't take your phone call now because I got to call John Nichols because I have a guest, that 303 area code person. Sorry about that. All right. we're calling John Nichols now. John Nichols, as I mentioned, is the national affairs correspondent for The Nation and One Ringy Dingy. And he's based in Wisconsin, as I said, which is sort of the center of the universe right now.
And hello.
Hello, John Nichols. It's Nicole Sandler calling.
Hey, Nicole.
How are you doing today?
How are you?
I'm surprisingly hanging in there. But, oh, my goodness, what I couldn't make up a story like what we're living through if I tried. And if I tried, I don't think any publisher or movie producer would ever buy it because it's too outlandish. But here we are.
Well, I'm living in a state that's recounting its ballots as we speak.
You are. As I mentioned, John Nichols, you're based in Wisconsin. Your family has lived in Wisconsin for something like eight generations, right?
I think I might be stretching a little bit. it's since 1823.
Oh, well, so, yeah. Okay. Well,
we're coming up on 200 years.
Wow. That could be eight generations, but whatever it is, it's a long time. And Wisconsin, you know, I was looking up the history of recounts and such. And when Scott Walker was defeated, your last horrible governor, he could have asked for a recount and he didn't. He said, no, you know what? The margin is too big for any recount to make up the difference. And he conceded, which is what Donald Trump should be doing. But he's going around the country, I guess, fighting. Not that he thinks any of these states will overturn the whole thing. He's just trying to gum up the works, isn't he?
Well, I think there's a little more to it than that. But you're right. And let's stick with that Walker analogy just for a moment, because it's such a good one.
Okay.
Scott Walker only lost by a very narrow margin, roughly parallel to what Trump has lost by. Same thing with our state attorney general in 2018. He lost by a smaller percent of the vote than Trump has lost by. He didn't seek a recount, even though he was a Republican who lost because of a large turnout in Milwaukee and Madison. And so what Trump is objecting to is a result that Republicans have accepted in the past. And so then you ask yourself, well, why is he objecting? What's going on here? What's the strategy? Well, it's quite clear that what Trump is trying to do is to raise objections, get them on the record, because that then allows lawsuits when he has lost the recount. And so Trump is not interested in this recount. He just wants it as a process step to then launch a legal strategy that tries to find a judge who will disqualify the ballots from the overwhelmingly African-American, Latino, student, and working class precincts that produced a massive vote against him.
It's astounding that this is still going on. And I guess you have to just let it play out. Joe Biden today, I guess, reaffirmed that he's not planning to take any legal action to go to court against the Emily Murphy woman at the General Services Administration for fear that they could lose the lawsuit.
Well, I mean, the courts have not been as reliable as they should be.
Right.
But I actually am a little critical of Biden on this. I think he should be more aggressive.
Me too.
In this period, because I think it is possible to win the election and lose the transition. And that's a dangerous circumstance to get into. The fact of the matter is that Trump, I think, knows he has lost. I think Trump is a grifter and he's trying to get people to give him money to maintain this fight. But also, he is looking for that one in a thousand possibility something could overturn something. A judge might help him. But he's also seeking to undermine and weaken a Biden presidency. And so I do think there's a point where Biden should be stepping up.
Uh-oh, John, did I lose you? Oh, I think we lost John Nichols. John Nichols.
I can hear you.
You are. Oh, now you're back.
I can hear you.
Okay, you just cut out for a second.
I can hear you very well.
Good.
I could hear you through all that. I'm sorry that you couldn't hear me.
That's okay. So you were, as you were saying, sorry about that, that Donald Trump just wants to again, sort of to paraphrase, gum up the works. He wants to sow discord. And but I'm wondering, is this treason? Because what he's doing is not protecting, not defending the Constitution of the United States. He's fighting against it. And he's putting the people of this country in danger because he's not allowing any communication between the incoming administration and his when it comes to COVID. So people are dying.
Well, it's clearly an impeachable offense, right? This is an offense that in any reasonable circumstance, a president would be impeached and removed from office for. That goes beyond question. It's not a debatable point. When you get into the legalities beyond that, of course, there's a great debate about whether you can hold a sitting president to account for wrongdoing in office and things of that nature. But what I would tell you is that what Donald Trump is doing at this point, no matter what the legal interpretation of it is, and I happen to be, you know, quite in favor of looking at legal options, but no matter what the legal interpretation is, it's deadly. It is a vicious, cruel act that undermines what should be the smoothest transition of power in history because of the incredible dangers and challenges that the country faces. So
exactly.
No matter how we look at it, the court of history should see this man as, one of the cruelest figures in history, because when you have people who are literally dying by the thousands, when you have people who are getting infected by the hundreds of thousands. Yeah. When you're going into a long and very difficult winter, when small businesses are failing, when farms are struggling, when the whole country is in this difficult place, and you have just clearly lost an election by 6 million or more votes, when you've lost the Electoral College by 306 to 232. When you've lost the majority of congressional districts in the country, you know, when you've had all of these, you know, rebukes, to drag it out at this point makes it much harder to fight the pandemic, to address the economic issues that have arisen, and also to deal with what, Nicole, you full well know and I know, is going to be the very complicated and very difficult task of getting the vaccine to the people that need it when it eventually comes online. All of this is what we should be focused on. Instead, in my state of Wisconsin today, Donald Trump's lawyers were trying to disqualify the ballots of people who list absentee ballots of people who listed themselves as indefinitely confined, i.e., he's trying to figure out ways to disqualify people who are at home, staying at home because they have pre-existing conditions, because they're disabled, because they couldn't go to the polls in a pandemic.
You're, exactly. You know, and that describes me. I'm in Florida, where we've always been able to vote absentee. You didn't need a reason. And I've had my ballot mailed to me for years and always mailed it in, or actually hand delivered it to the supervisor of elections office. I've done that before this year. This year was no different. But, you know, I'm one of the responsible ones, knowing that I'm at risk. I don't leave the house. Thankfully, I have a home studio. Yeah. I work from here. But this is what we should be doing. But this guy has every step of the way been fighting the processes that would mitigate that would make it better. I call it opposite world. Everything he does goes against the grain of common sense. But now he's taking it a step further, because this is when you follow the Constitution and the peaceful transfer of power. And everyone was floating these ideas before he lost. What would he admit that he lost? And now we know, no, he won't. It's amazing to me that we don't have legal recourse to get this process going. And that, again, as you know, I'm with you, John, on Biden. I think it should be a no-brainer. Of course you take him to court. The law says, I believe it's a law, that the apparent winner after the election begins the transition process. They're not saying the certified winner. They're not saying the absolute winner. They're saying the apparent winner, and that's Joe Biden.
Right. And you're exactly right, because you realize that you don't have an actual winner. I write books about this stuff. I deal with these issues quite a bit.
Yep.
You don't have an actual winner until January 6th, at least.
Huh.
Because January 6th is when the Senate accepts the Electoral College results. So that's that's the point. And we have always accepted that you can't wait until January 6th. Right?
Right.
I mean, then you'd be 14 days before a new administration
to transition, which is impossible. And again, it's a clear and present danger to this nation. And that's why I think this is treasonous. The whole thing is just unconscionable. So here we are. Then to make matters worse, just to add insult to injury, they lie about everything. And now they're rewriting history. Did you know that Donald Trump, according to them, didn't have a proper transition either? Excuse me. I remember Hillary Clinton conceding the next day, and then Barack Obama inviting Donald Trump to the Oval Office for the most awkward dual presser ever. And they were the Obama administration was nothing but gracious to them. And now for them to try
Without
to turn
doubt.
It around and say that didn't happen. But this is the gaslighting that they've been doing for the last 5 years.
Well, it's lies. It's flat out lies. And, look, at this point, the president of the United States has recognized that he has no way to get the second term that he wants. And frankly, to get the protection from legal jeopardy, not because of any of the issues we're talking about here, but because, he faces a lot of investigations and members of his family and inner circle face a lot of investigations, which would be made more difficult if he's serving a second term. So he's looking at all of these challenges, and he's decided to go for it. He's literally throwing things at the wall, hoping that something sticks. And we're seeing it here again, not to always go back to Wisconsin, but we're seeing it today in Wisconsin. Their first move as this recount today started. And remember, just to emphasize that Donald Trump has lost Wisconsin by more than 20,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
And that, while it's not a lot of votes, That doesn't get overturned.
No.
You don't overturn a 20,000 vote defeat. That just doesn't happen. And it's one that Republicans in the past have accepted. It's also very in character with Wisconsin elections. It's a closely divided state. Of the last six presidential elections in Wisconsin, four of them have been decided by under 1% of the vote. So
right.
This is just a closely divided state. We understand how to count votes. We understand how to, do it right. This recount isn't going to work. And so as absurd as it is today, Donald Trump's lawyers walked in and tried to disqualify tens of thousands of ballots, literally tens of thousands of ballots, because of the most absurd objections. Did somebody help someone fill out their address on an envelope? Well, yeah, that's fine. It's not illegal. It's fine
right,
to do that.
Exactly.
Was an envelope, licked right or something like that? These are absurd and ridiculous challenges. And you know what the most troubling thing is, Nicole? The most troubling thing is that when these go to the board of canvassers, the Republicans on these boards of canvassers are voting to uphold the Trump objections.
Well,
and these are, so he's got them doing his bidding at a point where he's asking for unimaginably absurd things.
Right. Now, so the same thing, we can talk about Michigan, where apparently the Trump team doesn't know the difference between the postal abbreviations for Michigan and Minnesota, which was the basis of one of their lawsuits saying the numbers don't add up because they were using the numbers from Minnesota talking about Michigan. Oh, my God. It's a comedy of errors, except it's not funny. But in Michigan, they had this board of supervisors counting the votes for Wayne County that includes Detroit. And it was two Republicans, two Democrats. The two Republicans first refused to certify the numbers. After a 3-hour standoff and a lot of protests, they finally gave in and did it. Then Donald Trump called them personally. And lo and behold, the two Republicans said, never mind. We want a do-over. We take it back. What? Yeah. Have you ever heard of anything like this before, ever?
No, I remember I covered the Florida recount in 2000.
I know.
I think you were obviously very conscious of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw some pretty absurd things down there. But the amazing thing about what's going on now in this period is that the Trump people are doing the things that the Bush people in 2000 rejected.
Wow.
And that's the important way to understand it. Now, and this is specific. It's things that the Bush people said, well, no, that would really disqualify us in the opinion of the American people. It would be so absurd, so awful. That's not the way you would ever want to try and win the presidency. And to give you an example, in Florida in 2000, there were a few Republican legislative leaders who proposed the idea of having the legislature just declare the electoral votes for Bush, right?
Right.
Like override the will of the people. But they were immediately, you know, shunted aside and discarded. It was not something that was going to happen. I wrote about it. I followed it closely. Now, that is an open strategy of the Trump people.
Right.
So what the Bush people rejected, and they were cutthroat, to be quite honest. I will never, ever forget some of the things they did. But their kind of bottom of the barrel, you know, gut bucket, worst strategies, the one they said, oh, we're not going to do that. You know, that is A, too absurd, and B, too destructive,
mm-hmm.
too, you know, kind of burn it all down kind of approach. That's where the Trump people are beginning their strategies. And so this is a very dangerous game they're playing. They will lose. They will fail. Trump will leave the White House on January 20th. That is a given. But the damaging thing, or the dangerous thing, is that between now and January 20th, the damage he does to democracy,
mm-hmm.
first and foremost, but also the damage he does to our society, the depth of the divisions that he is sowing, is so severe that it will make it very difficult for Joe Biden to govern. He will be able to, but it will be much more difficult. And he's doing it at a time of pandemic and economic crisis. Imagine if Herbert Hoover had done this in the Great Depression.
God.
Just think of that.
Right.
You know?
Now, this is why I keep going back to my belief, and I have a guest coming on Monday, the author of a guy named Carlton Larson, whose new book is called On Treason, a Citizen's Guide to the Law. I've had this book sitting here, and it's like, I need to ask him, because this sounds treasonous mm-hmm. to me. He is hurting the country and the people of this nation, the polar opposite of what his job is as the president, to serve and protect. So it's astounding that today, I don't know if you heard it, he went into the James Brady briefing room in the White House to have a press conference of sorts. He didn't take any questions, but ostensibly it was to talk about lowering prescription drug prices. But of course, he went off on how he won the election, how it was fixed, how the big pharma companies had it in for him, and everybody, he's the victim, and this was crooked, and he won. It's like, it's opposite world. The fact that this is happening in the United States of America is astounding. And what gets me is that none of the Republican senators who are in power are doing anything. They're backing him up.
It is truly unimaginable
mm-hmm.
at this point. And look, the important thing is that we keep a record of this. And I don't say this casually, that we remember this. And we learn to talk about it in the most profound and effective ways, because these are guilty men and guilty women.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing something harmful to their country for reasons of extreme partisanship and ideological excess. And back when World War II began in England, Michael Foote, the great journalist and later the leader of the Labour Party, and some of his colleagues wrote a book titled Guilty Men. And they wrote about the people who had failed to prepare for war, who had failed to prepare for the fight against fascism, those who had practiced appeasement. And they wrote specific chapters about each of these individuals. And they didn't call for prosecutions or anything like that. They simply said, we are putting this on the record so that these people will never return to positions of power. And at some fundamental level, that's a really vital thing. And I know we can be cynical about media. We can be cynical about the political debates we're involved in. But we should never be cynical about this. We should remember the people who stood at Trump's side and aided and abetted him in this period. And we should always, always remember that they should never, ever be allowed near positions of power.
Well, exactly. But let me ask you this. Over the past 4 years, while they're screaming, the Democrats want to pack the courts, the Republicans have packed the courts. Mitch McConnell held open something like 200 seats, not only that one Supreme Court seat for a year, but other judicial lifetime appointments that he would just never bring Obama's nominees to the floor for a vote. That's why Trump was able to confirm over 220 judges, federal judges, lifetime appointments, people who the bar said were not qualified, that they're still pushing through. Do we have a chance to recover from this 4 years of disaster?
Yeah, we have a chance. In fact, I was just on a event yesterday with Nan Aaron, who is the head of Alliance for Justice. And she was talking about, you know, the preparations to begin to nominate and confirm qualified judges and justices ultimately. And, you know, where it all comes down to, I mean, Nan would be even more optimistic than I. I think we have a critical juncture. It comes down to January 5th in Georgia. If those two seats go to the Democrats, Reverend Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, Democrats will have control of the Senate.
That's right.
It will be narrow and it will be difficult. No doubt about that. But they will have the process to begin confirming judges. It will take time. It will not be easy. But this is the painful, job that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have been given. They have to rebuild a country that has been severely harmed by a self-absorbed, egomaniacal, incredibly destructive president.
What you just said can't be underscored enough. It all comes down to Georgia, which went blue this time, right? Elected Biden four times today, the fourth time today, they announced that
it's crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
So
Joe Biden is going to be the man who's won the presidency more times than anyone in history.
Exactly.
Because it's being confirmed repeatedly.
Yeah, right. But so it comes down to them doing the right thing and voting in two Democratic senators. That's a heavy lift in a southern state that has not been blue in decades at any time, but especially now. You know that the Republicans are going all in. Apparently their war chest is bigger than the Democrats. Do you have hope that this can actually happen?
Sure, I do. Look, it's by the historical measures and the historical models on this, the Republicans should win. They've done very well in runoffs in Georgia.
Yeah.
And so I've covered them for years. I've seen the patterns. There's no doubt that they have an advantage. However, Joe Biden wasn't supposed to win Georgia this year either.
Right.
And so something's changing. They came close to electing Stacey Abrams governor. I actually think she probably won. It was a victim of voter suppression.
Yep.
But they certainly came to the edge there. We have now, I think just by natural progress, gotten to that next stage. I think it is fair to say that Georgia is an evenly divided state. So this is going to be an incredible voter mobilization challenge. But it's not beyond the realm of possibility that they can mobilize a sufficient number of voters to tip the balance toward Reverend Warnock and toward John Ossoff. And that if they do that, that they can get those votes counted and get these senators qualified and get them up to Washington in time to cast those critical votes.
Right.
Beginning on January 20th.
Right. And if both Warnock and Ossoff win, then it'll be 50-50. So Kamala Harris will have a very visible and increased role because she'll be the tiebreaker in the Senate. So if it's 50-50 with the vice president being a Democrat, then the Democrats do have control of the Senate, and Chuck Schumer would then be the majority leader, and Mitch McConnell would be knocked down to where he can't hurt us anymore, maybe?
Effectively the case. it's a challenging situation because you would that 50-50 split would require Kamala Harris to always be at the ready.
At the Senate, right?
Remember, you know, it's not an easy circumstance. But yes, you could organize the Senate with a effectively a Democratic majority, and it would always be tenuous. And look, then the reality is that there will be discussion. I think it's fair to say of the possibility that Biden might appoint someone like Pat Toomey, the soon to retire senator from Pennsylvania, to a position, which might open up a seat there, and then you'd have an appointment, maybe a special election. That's simply the reality that there's going to be a lot of speculation about the Senate going forward. But that baseline truth, the baseline truth is that if you win those two Senate seats in Georgia, you have set up a circumstance where Democrats can begin to effectively govern. And that effective governance includes approval of cabinet picks. It includes approval of judges. And it includes approval of a stimulus package mm-hmm. that might get us out of this pandemic crisis.
Oh, please. Yeah, something's got to give. And what's happening now is just making things worse. So, this is the hardest part. As Tom Petty said, the waiting is the hardest part. And where we should be in an actual transition now, a lot of people are just freaking out. And with no stimulus and no talks even for any more help, this is past the critical point. Something's got to be done. So we did our part. We came out and voted. When this is all said and done, it looks like 80 million people will have voted for Joe Biden. But on the other hand, 74 million voted for Donald Trump. So what does that say about us?
Well, Nicole, what it says about us is that we are a divided country, but we've always been a divided country. And I do apologize. I've got another interview coming on. And so, let me finish this good thought, maybe a good thought. And that is, we are a divided country. We have always been divided. Remember, 40% of the people voted for Barry Goldwater in 1964. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, he lost, but still got a substantial vote.
Right.
We've had many, many elections where you had that division. Famously, remember, 60% of people voted against Abraham Lincoln for president in 1860. So, we don't always get the results we want. We recognize people aren't always on the same page. But at our best, once we have an election and we have a clear winner, we let that person take office and hopefully try to unite us. The unity comes not on election day. It comes after election day. And this is why this transition fight is so important, because we can't begin to get to some point where you might start to pull people together until Donald Trump stands down.
Yeah, exactly. Well, good luck to us all. John Nichols of The Nation, thank you for your work as always, and stay safe there in Wisconsin. I heard there's a shooting today at a mall. I understand that only one person was injured, no fatality, so that's good news, but we had gotten a break from mass shootings for a little while, and this was disturbing, and then I saw it's in your backyard. So my best to everybody, and stay safe. John Nichols, thank you so much.
It's an honor to be with you, Nicole. I hope to talk
to
you
too.
Again soon.
Thank you so much. Definitely. All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
John Nichols, the national affairs correspondent for The Nation. He's been at The Nation forever. He's been in Wisconsin forever. And he's got a good take on the way this country works. I hope he's right. He sounded a little bit more optimistic than I am. And I was glad to hear that he's as critical of Joe Biden's desire to stay out of the legal fray on this. So right before I came on the air, I saw a clip from on NBC, and it was, what's his name? Jeff Bennett. Here's what Jeff Bennett said about Joe Biden and the possibility of going to court on this. This is what I was talking about, and it's kind of disturbing.
Well, the truth is, Chuck, they don't have a lot of good options, in large part because it is unprecedented for a sitting president to actively obstruct a presidential transition in the way that Donald Trump has. And beyond what Joe Biden told our friend and colleague Kristen Welker yesterday, our reporting, based on talking to campaign sources, is that the campaign is reluctant to sue, in large part because they are fearful of the blowback, that if they do go to court and if they lose, the repercussion will be such that the transition could be delayed indefinitely. The sort of crux of the issue here is that the transition law, there is a phrase there that if the campaign, if the transition rather, were to sue, they would focus on the fact that the transition law only requires there to be an apparent winner. Well, Joe Biden has been the apparent winner, at least tomorrow. It'll be 2 weeks now. But the law as written is vague, and there is no mechanism in the law to really specify when cooperation has to happen or the degree to which cooperation has to happen. And, you know, for this other issue with the president trying to actively subvert the will of the people, effectively trying to steal the election, Bob Bauer, who, as you know, is a senior Biden advisor, a respected attorney, said that the American people should be deeply concerned about what the president is trying to do. But they should be actively mindful of the fact that it will not work, that every Trump campaign, every GOP legal challenge has either been withdrawn or has failed, Chuck. Right.
Please let it be so. Please.
Well, and especially
the alternative is just unthinkable. All right. We're going to take a quick time out to our business on Progressive Voices, and we'll be back with Boca Brittany Summers next. We got to get to work, don't we?
Our adversaries aren't waiting. The coronavirus isn't waiting. The economy isn't waiting. America shouldn't have to wait either. The American people have spoken. The result is clear. It's time to move forward and get to work.
Meet Emily Murphy, a political hack, a traitor, appointed by Donald Trump to lead the General Services Administration, the GSA. What has Emily done? Rooftop sex parties. Emily was A-OK with alcohol ragers and rooftop sex parties at taxpayer expense at her government office. Swamp monster. Emily Murphy worked with Trump to prevent the FBI from moving its D.C. office space to help the Trump Hotel across the street. She tried covering it up to Congress.
Was the president or anyone at the White House involved in those discussions?
Sir, to my knowledge, the destruction that we got came from the FBI.
We now know, in fact, that the president ordered this decision, which has the effect of benefiting his hotel and his own financial bottom line.
Sedition. And now Emily Murphy created chaos by unlawfully refusing to sign paperwork to permit a smooth transition to President-elect Biden, placing our lives at risk.
What do you see as the biggest threat to your transition right now, given President Trump's unprecedented attempt to obstruct and delay a smooth transfer of power?
More people may die.
Emily Murphy is a national disgrace. Tell Emily Murphy to sign the transition papers now. Midas Touch is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Oh, yes. And now for something completely different.
Okay, listen. Somebody has got to get serious.
Well, I think that sky's the limit on what we can gouge you for a gallon of gas. And long as we don't have any oversight or regulation, Wall Street can speculate all they want. And there's not a goddamn thing you can do about it.
You hear about alternatives, right? Wind, solar, algae.
I think that'll work on a large scale, but it won't be any more affordable. The reality is, we're big oil, and what that means is we can ram our fists so far up your ass we can tickle your tonsils. I mean, what are you going to do? Write an angry letter to President Jell-O?
We gotta get on this now.
Get on this, lady. At Chevron, our scientists are hard at work developing a mechanical dildo that rapes you as you bend over to fill the tank.
Chevron, gas prices high as the sky. You won't complain.
Ah, the brilliance of our friend Boca Brittany Summers. And you know, I think I should check with our friends over who are monitoring for me. Yep. House of Roberts is monitoring Progressive Voices for me. And today we were able to play spots, but for some reason, I'm not able to end the spots. So it's always something. It's not one thing or another. Anyway, with that said, sorry, PV listeners, come on over to NicoleSandler.com. We welcome Boca Brittany Summers back to the show. Hey there, honey.
Hi, Nicole. And as Zoom etiquette would have it, I should say thank you for having me on. Now, on to the issues.
Yes, on to the issues. So, you know, I noticed that this week was Transgender Awareness Week, and you are our official transgender person. In fact, what do you say on your website at thebritsummershow.com?
Well, I don't know if you get the audio, but what I say is this. Hopefully the audio will play
on
here.
It should.
The only licensed transgender broadcaster license.
You're coming to the place where you'll hear the truth. It's the Brit Summit Show.
And that's the truth.
That's the truth, baby.
Okay. So you're licensed by who?
Actually, by the Federal Communications Commission as of 1996.
Because they don't give licenses anymore. When I started in radio in the very olden days in 1979, we needed a FCC operator permit. They had done away with the class 3 licenses that you needed before then, and now you don't even need that permit. So you just made that up.
You don't need that or a visitor's pass.
No, you don't.
I mean, I went for the Class A engineering.
Wow.
You can see how far that got me in life.
Yeah, I see. So, Britt, how have you? I haven't seen you. You live all of, 5.5 minutes away from me, but we have not been able to get together, with one exception when you came over after George Rodriguez passed away and we did a show together because we needed to. I have not seen you, but, don't take it personally. I haven't seen anyone. I don't leave the house. I don't think you do either, really.
No. Public sees me. That's about it. And to our listeners who aren't in Florida, that's our chain of
our Kroger. Except they were the big. We stopped going there because they were one of the biggest corporate donors in the state of Florida, not only to Trump but to the efforts against medical marijuana. I mean, everything that I'm for, they're against, and they're putting money up behind it. So
they always have been a right wing organization.
Yeah. It's okay. I choose not to give them my money.
Governor Claude Kirk. I mean, it goes that far back.
Wow.
So it doesn't surprise me. However, their in-store policies, as far as LGBT is concerned, they're fine because they're not stupid. They're right wing, but they sure like my business. So I never had a problem in that store.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. And what am I doing? I have a cough button here. Oh.
Okay. So now we're getting a look at where the magic is made in the Britt Summers studio.
And if you hear the audio, I have my, since this is Transgender Awareness Week.
Yeah.
So now everyone is aware.
Oh, that's just a little thing.
That's my magic wand.
I see. So is that it's Transgender Awareness Week. And aside from one place that I saw it and something that I just forwarded you from this new news organization called The 19th, which has a wonderful feature today on Transgender Remembrance Day, I've not seen it mentioned anywhere. Does that, you think that has to do with, the mood of the country and who's in charge these days?
Well, it's not only par for the course for our press or what we call our journalists out there.
Yeah.
It's not sexy enough to sell time. But we have the COVID pandemic right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have a maniacal dictator that's handcuffed to the Resolute desk right now. There's a lot of other things going on. And, I wanted to ask you, as in Ruben asked you.
Yeah, yes. Former governor of Florida. That's an inside joke.
Another right winger.
Yeah. Was he? I don't remember.
Yeah, he was. In fact, the only, I guess, close to progressive governor Florida ever had was Bob Graham.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
true.
Everybody else was like, and Lawton Childs was a Democrat, but he was like far to the right.
Was he? I don't even know.
Oh, he was against casino gambling and all.
A lot of them are.
Yeah.
It's the southern thing, and Florida's weird because we're in the south, but we're not in the south, because South Florida is like northeast, but North Florida is like the deep south. it's Florida. It just is. Yeah.
Which so I take credit for. I should have trademarked that back in November 2000.
Can't help you with that. So you've been doing your show. Boca Brittany Summers has the Brit Summers show, both terrestrial down here in South Florida on some weird radio station, but also online at thebritsummershow.com.
Weird radio. because it's Beasley. So it comes as no surprise. And it's a cluster. I'm like on four different channels.
Are you? Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. 95.3,
96.9, 103.9, 1470. It's what they're doing to sell off real estate and put everything on one transmitter.
Oh.
That's the way it's going right now.
So the one, it goes out on those four signals at the same time. So all they're just simulcasting everything.
Yes.
Lovely. Yeah,
that's
radio.
Where we are today.
Yeah, terrestrial radio is, like everything else. Kind of dying.
And I wanted to get with you, and I'm really glad we got to talk, because I would like to form a coalition of broadcasters somehow. I don't know where to put this together. I mean, I miss Mitchell Stolberg, who really knew how to start one of these things.
You and me both.
But I want to, now that Biden's going to be in, and he will be.
Yeah, eventually.
I don't know who this filet mignon Clyburn is.
Well, let me tell you, Mignon Clyburn is an FCC commissioner. She is the daughter of James Clyburn, if that helps you at all.
That explains Eric's, like, the Colin Powell thing.
Exactly. Exactly. That's who Mignon Clyburn is. And I understand she's not horrible. But she's not great. But the good thing about having a Democrat in the White House is that the FCC and these other commissions will be, it'll still be a, you know, bipartisan commission, but there will be, I think it's three Democrats and two Republicans as opposed to the opposite.
Okay.
So the Democrats will have a majority on these committees.
So maybe we can get the ball rolling on rescinding the Telecom Act and having a new one, a new one written. Well, I know they have to include the internet this time. That's what the first
problem
one was about. And that's okay. Here's the problem. And I talked about this on my show, if I may.
Yes.
Because this has really got me upset. I was watching that Tuesday night election really close.
Uh-huh.
As you probably, I don't know.
And we were too.
A lot of people preferred to get drunk and pass out. But I couldn't help but notice. Well, number one, at like 2 seconds after 7 on election night, New York went blue. Ding, 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 ding.
Well, because
ding,
it was a no-brainer, because it was overwhelming, and nobody thought anything different would happen. The minute the polls closed, they already know.
The speed of it was so fast. I could hear the spirit of Mayor Koch going,
eek.
Where'd it go?
Uh-oh. Ah, don't you hate it when that happens?
Oh,
you're so ready with the punchline, and just the cart failed.
Not responding. I have Mayor Koch here. He's very upset. All right, anyway.
Come on, man. Fuck you.
There he is. So I was watching the red states, and especially Florida, the north part.
Yeah.
Now, everybody says we're a purple state. No.
No, we're
68
not.
68 counties. Six went blue. Normally only five go blue, but this time Tallahassee went blue, which was interesting. But all of the red counties have one thing in common, including Texas. If you notice, the panhandle in Texas was completely red, but there's like three people live there.
Right.
Okay. Still, those numbers add up, and that's how he got Texas. It wasn't, Houston went for Biden?
Yeah. I mean, it was looking for most of the night like it was going to go for Biden, and then, you know, Trump pulled it out. But it is Texas, after all, and the fact that it was up for grabs for so long, it was a big deal.
And the same thing happened with in 2018 with the what's his name, the goofy guy who dances on the tables.
Beto O'Rourke.
Beto O'Rourke. It was the same kind of. It went blue in the cities and went red in the rural districts. Now, what do they have in common with North Florida that and down here that they have in Texas and all the other Midwest corn-grown countries?
You tell me.
They have no information. They have Rush, Hannity, Levin, 24 hours a day. Now the Democrats, okay, granted, during the election cycle, they get their media money out, media checkbooks out, and start going on the TV and stuff. After the election, they stop. Not the Republicans. Right now, all of the, as you were talking about sedition, they're backing it up right now on the air, and they're listening to it in those panhandles of Texas and the red counties in Florida. We have no voice, and you know this. You talked to Tom Steyer.
as much good as that did. No, and I had this conversation the other day with, I'm trying to remember who it was, about the fact, Thomas Frank, about the fact that we have no progressive media infrastructure. The money on, and Mike Lux, actually, I had this conversation with just the other day, that the moneyed interests on the left do not support progressive media. So we've given over all of radio, talk radio, which used to be bipartisan, to lack of a better term, but you used to get all voices, and now it's all right wing. We don't have a presence on terrestrial talk radio anymore.
None at all. Well,
except you.
Not in those areas at all. And the argument is always made by our Democratic colleagues, the same argument. AM's irrelevant now. Everybody's online. They're interactive, man. They just don't get it. They're interactive. They go online, they get their rumor mill, and it's reinforced by AM radio.
Yep.
Those, the beer belly militia that went into the Michigan State Capitol.
Yep.
What do you think they were getting their marching orders?
Of course. And look, online. They still listen to radio and their pickup trucks and their, you know, that's what they do. And it's because it's free. It's there. Internet, you know, they have to pay for. And it's like the lowest common denominator. And they're everywhere. You can start in South Florida and drive crisscross up to the northwest tip of Washington State and never be without Rush Limbaugh, but you could go for days without hearing a voice like yours or mine, Britt, without hearing a progressive voice on the air.
Yeah, and there's no more FCC oversight outside of saying tit on the air.
Oh, you can't curse. God forbid you say fuck. They'll come at you with a $300,000 fine. But, you know, you can say that Donald Trump won the election and the Democrats are stealing it and make shit up day in and day out and lie about everything. And that's okay.
Well, it's okay to use eliminationist rhetoric. It's okay to encourage violence on the streets. It's okay to applaud people bring, like that kid who shot the protester.
Right. Kyle Rittenhouse, who, by the way, bailed out today. $2 million.
Oh, really?
He paid his bail. And he's out on $2 million bail. And you know how that money was raised? They did like a GoFundMe for him. And they raised millions of dollars for a murderer. Yeah. They made him a hero.
Are any voices on the air to counter that?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, that's the thing. Right. You see, with podcasting, you're segregated.
Yeah.
We get people listening to us that agree with us.
That's right.
We're not going to get. And the same for them. It's segregated. What the original original Telecom Act. Telecom Act was the Fairness Doctrine. Everybody goes on there.
That's
standards
right.
Standards and practices. And the first thing the right wingers will say when you threaten them with the Fairness Doctrine is, you want to take us all off the air. And it's totally not true.
No. And as I've said many times, look, I worked when I first got into out of college, got into radio. I moved to New York. I worked at WMCA, which was a talk station. And we had right wing Bob Grant. And we had liberal Barry Gray and Barry Farber and everything in between and a financial guy and a psychologist and a this one and a that one. It was a bit of everything on the same station. That's how radio used to be.
Now, you can tell me, you were personally there. How many colors did Bob Grant's toupee turn?
A lot. Bob Grant was the most, he was a big teddy bear who came off like a bully on the air. But he was always so concerned about his weight. And he was a slight guy, like a little guy. But he was always dieting, always the next crazed diet. That's what I remember of Bob
Grant.
He
was Newman, huh?
Except he wasn't big. Yeah.
At least he wasn't Jeffrey Toobin. Oh.
No, I don't believe he was.
What an idiot. By the way, I did wear pants today, so there's no fear of any Toobin going on.
No Toobin, huh? Okay. No. Have you ever been even tempted to, while you're on a Zoom call, whip it out and, you know?
No. No, that usually is the other way around.
Oh, right. Exactly.
Hey. Or so. Would have a lot of fun with me on there.
I bet he would.
What a shame, because he would be in demand right now with everything going on.
Really, oh, you customers?
No, I'm talking about as a pundit getting paid $1,500 per FaceTime on the punditry shows.
Who gets paid $1,500? Excuse
what you
me.
Get, because of SAG rules, you get $1,500 per appearance on a punditry show.
No shit.
That's why they're, what do they call it?
The contributors, because they're paid. They don't get paid piecemeal. Hold on. We got to say goodbye to Progressive Voices Network. I'm not ready to let a Brit go yet. So we'll say goodbye to Progressive Voices. Bye, Progressive Voices. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday. 1 second here. Okay, they're gone. Now we can say whatever we want.
I was dancing to that.
So, Britt, yeah, I lost. It's Friday night. It's now 6 o'clock Eastern. I'm off the clock, and I totally lost the train. I trained what you were saying about what? Oh, 15 pundits. So contributors, yeah. When they say that somebody on MSNBC or CNN is a contributor, they get a salary, so they don't have to pay them every time they come on. They get a monthly stipend.
But sometimes when they're not like regulars on there, they become that. At first, they're like a special guest.
Right. And then it's when they're a contributor or an analyst, they get paid. But if you're just a guest, like I was on when I was arrested, you know, when Alan West had me arrested back 10 years ago.
You got $1,500.
Right. I was on Cenk Uygur's show when he was on MSNBC. I didn't get paid. You don't get paid for being a guest.
You got to bring it up.
Hey, I'm just as happy they wanted to hear my story.
That's National FaceTime.
Yeah, I don't think that's because it's a news interview. News interviews don't pay. I think you're wrong here. I think contributors are paid contributors. That I know. But I don't think anybody else who goes on there gets paid. If you go on like a Mar or Real Time or you're on a guest on one of those shows, you get paid because that's not considered news. Well, a news interview does not get paid.
That's a $1,500
okay. check. Yes, on Mar or on The Late Show or on, you know, with the Jimmy Kimmel or Fallon or what. Yes, those people get paid. Okay. Yes. And it just took us a while because it's Friday
like
night.
Game show regulars like Hollywood Squares or something.
They got paid.
$400 appearance back then.
You know. Right. Well, there was a show that used to be on Comedy Central that came on after The Daily Show that was called, I forget what it was called. It was with Chris Hardwick. It was a game show. It was, you know, it was funny. But apparently it was too expensive because they had three comedians on as contestants every night and they had to pay them.
You got to pay them. Yeah, that's the gotta only problem. Yeah. If only you could do it for free. Oh, I guess that's where podcasting comes in.
Ah. we scrape the bottom of the barrel of the entertainment industry. We're the cleanup crew.
Don't expect a check.
Oh, so Britt, is this shit ever going to end? Are we ever going to be back to normal again? You think we're ever going to be able to go out and see people without a mask or... hug our kids or, you know, go out for a meal again?
You're asking me to be optimistic.
Yeah, I know. Because I'm not having luck with that. I know.
I think that once Biden gets in and these vaccines are approved by a real Food and Drug Administration or the...
like people that we can trust. Right. Yeah. Right.
Okay. It's going to be gradual, but it really won't get back to normal till the end of 21. That's my prediction.
Okay.
But that's a realistic prediction. But what they're not saying is, and nobody is, how many strains is this a vaccine for? There's allegedly 12 strains of COVID.
I don't know. And there are three different vaccines now that are contenders for fast approval. It's the Moderna, it's the Pfizer, and it's the AstraZeneca, which is done in conjunction with Oxford, which has been at it the longest. And so, you know, again, if it was Trump who was in charge and if, God forbid, he had won, I'd be resigned to just being in this house for the rest of my life because or in a house for the rest of my life, wherever I wind up living. But the you know, With Biden coming in, he'll put adults in charge, and I'll believe them. Although I probably still won't take a vaccine right away, because they usually study the test subjects for 2 years before a vaccine is approved. And though they're not seeing any side effects now, we don't know what's going to happen 2 years down the road.
Well, if there's any benefits to be had by wearing a mask, and I wear gloves and goggles when I go out.
So do we.
Well, you won't get even a cold. That's the nice part.
Right.
When you think about it, because they were worried about influenza during the winter months.
Right. And I got a flu shot. That I did. I went out and got my flu shot. But I rarely go out. David does all of our shopping. But we go in the hazmat suits. We've got two masks. You know, first the KN95 with a black cloth mask over it, with a face shield, with gloves, because we're old and at risk and paranoid.
No, I don't know about old. But
well, yeah.
Belated happy
old.
Birthday.
Thank you, by the way. Yeah. You know, and I just saw in the chat room, one of our regulars in the NicoleSandler.com chat room, Robert, his daughter is away at college, and apparently she... as they were leaving, when the kids leave to go home for Thanksgiving, they're tested. She tested positive. It's frightening.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's horrible. I hope she's okay. Apparently, she doesn't have symptoms, if I read it correctly. So, you know, we're in uncharted territory on every front, and it's hard to, you know, keep your sanity. I've taken up cooking. I'm cooking. We're eating a mostly vegan diet these days. And it's good. We're making great food. And I've taken up painting.
I saw that.
I'm an artiste. Who knew?
That was impressive.
I still can't draw. I couldn't draw a person or an animal or anything, but I can do sunsets over the ocean and flowers and gardens and things like that. So it's calming.
Yeah, you look great.
You doing anything to take care of yourself?
I'm learning how to cook Chinese food.
Are you?
Since we can't go to one.
Right. And you like the Chinese food. You like the Szechuan, right? Or you like the Cantonese.
Oh, you remember.
I do.
Because that's the hardest one to find.
I do.
You and I grew up on Cantonese, and now it's very rare. Not even in New York. There's only one place in New York, King's on Long Island, that has Cantonese.
If they're still open.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm talking 2 years ago.
Well, you know, COVID.
I made shrimp with lobster sauce. I made shrimp with broccoli. And I'm learning how to make the sauces, which isn't all that hard. The prep is hard, but the cooking itself isn't bad. I'm becoming a sous chef. So I may rename myself Susan.
But the sous chef is the one who prepares everything and doesn't do the cooking.
I do that too.
Oh, so you're the sous and the you chef. The sous and the...
Well, let's put it this way. I'm Judy's personal chef.
Oh, okay.
So, right. And she's getting better, by the way. She's
good.
On the mend.
Okay. Is she getting any of that medical marijuana?
Well, that's, of course, a matter to be taken up at another time.
All right. Let's walk.
It was helpful.
Okay. Because it is helpful.
You see that in Oregon? Everything's legal. The whole wax.
I want to say Wyoming. Did you see? I think it was Wyoming or one of those states that they legalized medical and for personal use both 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's happening. And I feel so bad because George picked the wrong time to go, because he'd be in Oregon right now dropping acid and taking mushrooms.
Right. Maybe he is. Maybe he's traveling. He doesn't have to. He can just experience whatever he wants.
It's a funny thing. One quick thing. I know I got to go. But speaking of George Rodriguez, anybody's interested in that, you can go back a few shows, a few months, you could see. But I remember clearly on our show, we used to have discussions on if you were stuffed when you died, what position would you want to be in?
Okay. And George said doggy position.
No. He said cigar store Indian.
I don't get it.
You know the cigar store Indian that would hold out the cigars?
Oh, I thought he just stands there. I honestly don't know what a cigar store Indian looks like.
It was a racist thing they did years ago.
Of course it was. But holding up a tray so you could take a cigar?
No, his hand was round and it was stuffed with round cigars. So you can take a cigar. But George's idea was you can flip the hand up and put a tray of shrimp on there.
Oh.
So when you think this way he would be eternally giving to people.
Okay.
Well, when you think about it.
That's George. I miss him.
No, the doggy position was my idea.
Good to know. All right. Boca Britt Summers, hear her show. It's every Sunday.
It moved.
Oh,
11:30 Saturday nights.
Oh,
but for your audience, just go to thebritsummershow.com.
Thebritsummershow.com. I will put a link on the blog today at NicoleSandler.com where the podcast will live. I miss you, Britt.
Miss you too.
I don't want you to think because you haven't heard from me that I'm not thinking about you. I don't call anybody except on the show.
So everybody's verklempt right now. So
right. I'm here. I'm always here. You're welcome to call anytime.
Well,
I pick up the phone.
I'll call people. I'll be on the. You know what you're asking for. You get me on the phone.
Well, maybe we'll share some cooking tips. Maybe one day we'll do like a cooking show. I'll take my
the
laptop into the kitchen. You can do that in your kitchen, and we'll cook together.
And here's the name of it: Take a Walk.
Take a Walk. I love it. All right. Okay. It's a date. We'll work on that. We'll work on that. All right, everybody. Let's hit my goodbye music. Britt Summers, thebrittsummershow.com. I'd say follow her on Twitter, but she never tweets. So, you know.
No.
All right. I will talk to you soon. Let's not be strangers, okay?
All right.
All right.
Good talking to you.
Good talking to you, too. Bye, sweetie. And with that, we come to the end of another week. We're the same place we were in a week ago. Just plug away, stay safe, wear your mask, have Thanksgiving at home. Monday and Tuesday are our forever days, just so you know. My kid won't be here, so I'm going to take it out on you. Monday, we will talk to this expert about treason, because I think Donald Trump is guilty of it. And you know what the penalty is for treason, don't you? Death. He's so quick to call people out and say they're committing treason when they're not committing treason. He's actually committing treason against the United States of America. Let's do something about it. All right. But start by having a great weekend. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Keep your head up. Stay safe. See you Monday.